edition of Shoal Sports Talk. It's been a while since we last did an episode, about 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Too long, too long.
Well, we've been busy with you teaching and everything like that. So
yeah, and you working and just us trying to get everything done. But we're definitely glad to be back on the air with you. We've got a few things to talk about tonight. A lot of sports events have happened since we last did a show, of course. The Super Bowl went down.
Yeah.
Giants-Pats.
It was a great game.
Great game.
I lost a lot of money betting on prop bets. But it was fun.
Who did you want to win it? Not who did you pick to win it. Who did you want to win
it? I wanted the Giants to win it.
Did you? Yeah. Did you pick the Pats, I guess?
I didn't. Well, I bet prop bets. I betted the over-under on the national anthem was 1:30. Who's going to win the opening kickoff? Who's going to win the coin toss? What the coin toss is going to be? What color is the Gatorade going to be?
Nice.
Really dunk. Fun stuff. Is it going to be a two-point conversion? And I took yes, and then I bet like $2, and I would have won $80 for that two-point conversion.
Would
have went in. So it was fun. It was a good football game. The Giants and Tom Coughlin, there's more haters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody wants to fire him every year, and he's won two out of the last five Super Bowls.
And that shows it's amazing how, you know, Clay Travis mentioned this in one of his books. He talked about the mercenary coach era that we're in now, where it's like, you don't have a coach very rarely that's long-standing with a team. I mean, the longest tenure NFL coach was Jeff Fisher, and then he was let go.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the longest a coach has been in a team? It can't be long. I mean, Belichick, I guess, maybe.
But, yeah, probably. So Andy Reid has been in Philadelphia for a while.
But it's like every year, it's just like, they're terrible. We need to fire Tom Coughlin. And then the next year, he'll take him to Super Bowl. I mean, they said at the beginning
of the year. Well, they're trying to fire him this year,
yeah,
in the middle of this year.
Six.
And the 2 years they've won Super Bowls, they've had slides in the season and won and gotten hot at the right time. And they've beaten great teams along the way. You know, they beat the Packers this year, who were undeniably the best team of the regular season.
Oh, yeah.
And then 2 years ago, you know, they beat the greatest football team of all time almost, you know, the Patriots. We're about to have the perfect season, and then they get beat. So they beat some great teams along their way and win championships. And unlike most New York teams, to where the media coverage is just so where you hate them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate the Giants.
I don't either.
And I guess it's because NFL loves the Patriots so much.
Possible. And it might be because the redheaded stepchild that everyone hates in the New York is the Jets.
Yeah.
Everyone hates the Jets. And what in the world's our coach's name? Just
Rex Ryan.
Everyone hates Rex Ryan, you know, and his antics. So it kind of pulls the attention off the.
Yeah, I like the Giants. I think Eli, and I, you know, me and you talked on Twitter the other night. I made a comment. People want to say, well, this guy's not a great quarterback because he hasn't won a Super Bowl.
Not a fan. I'm not a fan of the ring rating.
And the thing is with that is, then that makes you say who's the better Manning.
Right.
And those guys who knock Peyton for not winning more than one Super Bowl ring have got to say Eli's a better quarterback.
Right.
See, my thing with that, and I made this comment several times on the show, and nothing against Trent Dilfer because he's got more Super Bowls than I do, but if you're going to go by that, you're telling me Trent Dilfer's a better quarterback than Denver right now.
Yeah, sorry, not happening.
Yeah, not a million years.
Happening. You know, and I'm a little bit biased to Peyton because he played at Tennessee, and he's the golden child of Tennessee, you know, possibly the best player that's ever come through there. But, you know, you heard sports radio shows make the question, if Eli wins the Super Bowl, is he better than Peyton? I don't think so. I don't. And I'm biased. What do you think? I'm biased a little bit. That's all. I'll admit it.
Do I think he is better than Peyton Manning? No, I do not think he's the best Manning. I do think what he did Sunday was he solidified himself as an NFL Hall of Famer.
Possibly so.
Because he's going to win two Super Bowl rings. He's going to have 50,000 career passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
I think he may be more clutch than his brother.
Possibly.
When it comes down to the fourth quarter. Right now, if you're in the NFL and you are in the fourth quarter and you got a game-winning drive, there's nobody else I'd rather have in my quarterback. Is Eli Manning. He just doesn't get shook.
Right.
He's cool as a cucumber.
And I heard him say he felt when they came in that last huddle on that last drive, he didn't need to say anything to the team. because champions know the situation. They don't have to be reminded of circumstances. Champions don't have to be reminded of circumstances, exactly. Is what it said. And that's a great point. If you're a winning team, if you're a championship team, you don't have to be reminded, hey, guys, we really got to buckle down here,
yeah,
and make a good drive. You just know, hey, this is it. Let's make something happen.
And that's what it should be. He's done it in two Super Bowls. The biggest stage of them all.
And he was threading the needle on Sunday night.
Oh, he's good.
Better than I've seen a lot of quarterbacks do in a long time.
There's no doubt. He put himself in the elite quarterback.
Yes.
There, and I think he made himself a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
How
about D2 Danny Woodhead having
had a good game. Danny Woodhead played a great game. It was good. You know, it's always good to see the underdog like that.
Right.
A guy nobody really wanted. Twice. He won the Harlan Hill twice. So that's, you know, it's big for him. And I'm sure he wishes they'd have walked away with the championship. You know, they had their opportunities. A couple of drops here.
Yeah, and that's the big – I mean, that's the thing. All right, let me ask you this. Speaking of the drops, what do you think of the end of the game – or not the end of the game, but the Giants' last drive there, the Patriots letting them score, and what seemed like the Giants didn't want to score at that time?
I think that the – both options are okay in my mind. I think that Chris Collinsworth overplayed it a little much. Talking about, oh, they shouldn't have scored. That's the absolutely worst, terrible thing they could have done.
Right.
You know, fall down, make them take a timeout. You know, milk some more clock out. And I agree with that, yeah. I also agree with the Patriots letting them score. I think that's the only way they're going to get the ball back. And as an offensive player, it's got to be dang hard not to, you know, stop.
Yeah.
I don't really know how I feel about that. I think either or situation is fine. I think you take points.
That's the way I feel. You never, if you're the Giants in that situation, you never don't take points. And especially if it's six, if they're gonna give you 6 points, take them every time. Don't worry about the time. Have faith in your defense to get a stop. Yeah, he's Tom Brady, and he's, you know, this amazing quarterback. Have faith in your defense to get that stop so that, you know, hey, it doesn't matter. Our defense is going to stop him. We're going to take our 6 now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a fan of the Patriots letting them score. There's so many things that can happen in football. And yeah, you're like, yeah, but that's a bit, lot of what-ifs and would have really happened. Well, look, there's 57 seconds on the clock when they score, when they ran that play. Okay, they could fumble the next play.
Yeah.
They could, you hold them to a field goal. All right, for one, they botched the field goal. They botched the snap. They missed the field goal, which, yeah, he's a pro kicker, but it's happened. It's happened before. You block the field goal. Not to mention the fact that, okay, let's say you hold them to a field goal and they make it. Well, it's now a 1-point game. And we saw they wouldn't have as much time left. There would have been about 20 seconds on the clock. But we see when the Patriots get the ball back, if they would have made some catches there on that drive, they drove down the field.
Oh, yeah.
So my thing is, you do have Tom Brady, and you've got a pretty good receiving core and tight ends that are athletic receiving tight ends. Hold them to a field goal. Get the ball. Drive down the field. Get in field goal range and win the game. You've got a pro kicker, too. He can make a long field goal. It's not like you got to get on the 30.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not at all a fan of giving points to a team.
And I'd agree with that. I think some situations call for things that you normally wouldn't do outside the box. And I guess they saw that as the opportunity to, hey, let's not waste any more time. Let's get the ball. Let's go down and try to tie this game and go into overtime.
Yeah.
And, you know, Belichick's won a whole lot more football games than I have.
True.
See,
but to me, that's just – it's somewhat of micromanaging. It's overmanaging, kind of like La Russa did some with the Cardinals. He overmanaged with his pitchers, you know, hitting in the 8 spot and switching pitchers so often. And it's just overthinking the game instead of just playing it to an extent.
I agree.
To me, letting them score there is something that I do in intramural football. I say, hey, let's let them score here so we can get the ball. When it's flag football, and it don't matter. You know, in the Super Bowl, in the biggest game of the year – I don't think you let a team get 6 points. Ever. No matter the circumstance. I couldn't feel good about saying, let him through. Don't touch him. Don't try to lead him. Let him score.
And just, you know, and I agree with that, but also they had a chance there at the end to tie the game up.
True.
And you don't know what they would have had if they would have played it out.
That's very true.
I don't know. Let me, kind of going off subject here, we've talked about Peyton on this. I want to ask you what you feel about that. As a Peyton fan.
Okay.
And I have my opinions on what's going to happen. How do you feel about, you know, what's about to happen with him?
All right. As far as just him going to another team or staying with the Colts?
Or what he does, or if he continues to play, or...
I would not have a problem if he hung it up. I wouldn't think any less of him, personally. He's got a neck injury. He's been cleared to play now. But it's not an injury to, you know, laugh at there. It's a serious neck injury in the NFL where you're going to get hit. Now, granted, in the NFL they're playing now, he might not ever get hit
because
somebody's going to get fined if he does. But I almost agree with Mike Golic in this situation. He made mention, you got Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck on the same team. I don't see the problem. Everyone wants to talk about how that's such a big issue and that's such a big problem. I don't foresee the problem. All right, I understand, hey, you can't get a first-round draft pick. First pick, not just first round, first pick of the draft and sit him on the bench. But then again, why can't you? If Manning's good and he's the Manning of old, and he's the same old Peyton Manning that has led that same, virtually that same team who won 3 games this year to have winning seasons. Now, yeah, there's some changes here and there, but it's not like he's led the most talented team in the country, in the league, rather.
Yeah.
All right? He's led some not-so-great teams because they throw it a lot. That's their aim, is throwing the football. They're not a running team. They didn't have the throwing option this year, therefore they had to rely on the run and the bit of throwing they had with Curtis Painter.
I think the only way they can coexist together, if the Colts are 100% sure going to take Luck, the only way they can coexist together if he takes less money. Because you can't have...
I agree.
You can't have $70, $80 million wrapped up in two quarterbacks. Because then you're going to be terrible.
I'm not sure Manning wouldn't.
Well, I agree 100%. Why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he take less money to stay? If that's where he wants to stay. In my opinion, I think somebody who has the money, such as the Redskins, that may not make the best decision, are going to pay way too much money for him, and I think they're going to find out that he can't play anymore, and he's going to be done. I think he's done.
I would hate to see him as a Redskin, as a Peyton fan.
If he ever comes back as the Peyton Manning that he was, I will go on record saying that I'm shocked. Right now, on February 7, 2012, I think he's done.
Yeah.
Being that type of quarterback.
Right.
And I think, now, if you're somebody, and I know the Titans are really, the people of Nashville are really making a push for
Texas. They've got billboards
and they have a quarterback. You know, they have Hasselbeck.
And Locker.
And Locker. And then the Jets, you know, they have, you know, the Jets have Sanchez. If you're Miami, a team like Miami, maybe a team like the Jets, maybe Seattle, somebody like that, who he'll take, you know, a minimum deal just to see what he's got left in his arm, then that's not a big thing, but a bad thing in my mind. But I think the Redskins, somebody who are notorious for making terrible free agent moves,
absolutely,
will sign him. To too much money, and then he will never pan out. And I think the Colts are going to cut him, and I hate to see that happen. I would like to see him retire now.
Well, you hate to see a guy like that, his career end in this type of way, you know, because you want him to be the guy that just plays it all out, doesn't have the injury issues, and, you know, retires when he's good and ready to retire. And finishes on top of his
Would game. You rather have him retire, go out like this, or go out like Favre did, though?
And you, that's a very good point. I would rather have him go out like this.
Exactly.
Than go out as the, I'm, you know, hobbling on my last leg. And I'm not much. You know, I'm not even starting every game. you know, I get hurt here and there throughout the season. I'm off and on. No one wants that, I don't think. Peyton people don't want that. I don't think the NFL fan wants
that. I also don't think Manning would do that to himself.
I don't think he would either. Manning's not at all. As far as if he got in a situation like Favre's, I think he would hang it up.
His Papa John's commercial, I don't know if you saw it, where he's the referee.
Yeah.
And Jerome Bass, what are you doing? You got to work somehow.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that he's doing stuff like that. And another thing that people aren't talking about, because I don't know if it's that big of a deal, and the lost Manning, Cooper,
yeah,
has come out and said, no, this isn't true at all. But, you know, he had to quit playing early at Ole Miss because of spinal stenosis.
Exactly.
And he was on record saying that what Peyton has is not related to that at all, that it's not genetics. But it makes you think, you know, there is one of his brothers does have a spinal issue.
Right.
And if Manning can get his arm strength back, the way he thinks, you know, if he can get it 75-80%, you know, I think he can be productive. But I would be very surprised, very shocked if he's the Peyton Manning role ever again.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
It is sad.
Because even as an Alabama fan who my young childhood was tortured by Peyton Manning, I never thought he was going to retire. He was at Tennessee for 12 years. You know, I hate to see him go out like that.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys. He's not in the media much for things outside of the game. He's not going to have life issues that are out on the media. He's good at what he does. There's no question about that. He's a Hall of Famer. Possibly, you know, I don't see how you can't say he's one of the better quarterbacks ever.
Oh,
just
no
for
doubt.
His ability. One of the best. Yeah, you hate to see that, you know, somewhat. So, I don't know, man. It'll be curious to see over the next months kind of how things play out and how things get going, but who knows.
Just, and I know, you know, another topic that I want to ask you about.
All right.
And I've been critical of, speaking of Tennessee and Peyton Manning, I've been critical of Dooley on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about how recruiting went?
I feel good, honestly.
I think he closed well.
I think he closed well.
I think he got some guys on signing day that wouldn't, you know, that was big.
And a lot of talks made about us not getting an O-lineman. And I understand that to an extent. Then again, the line that we have is still very young. Now, that doesn't mean you don't need to replenish them and get guys in there because you don't want to experience a young line again. I understand that.
And my thing was, and I talked about that, was you sign a quarterback every year.
Yeah.
You know, you should at least sign one or two offensive linemen a year.
True. What I think Tyler Bray.
Now, the numbers game, the way you can only sign 25 now, might have hurt signing, you know, one of everything.
Right.
And maybe you have to address needs. I think, and I've said this several times to you, you know, off record, on record, I think he's got to win 8 this year.
And I'm not out. I'm in belief on that.
Or he's fired.
And I like him, but it's going to be hard to make a case for him if he doesn't win.
A lot of people like Mike Shula.
Right, exactly.
You know?
You know, you can like him all you want. If you don't win games, it's hard to make a case for you.
Yeah.
Tyler Bray should be happy with recruiting. He's got two weapons in Rodgers and Hunter, and then they added more. Out of the top JUCO receiver. They got some playmakers to go with the playmakers that they have, and that's good. You know, I think they tried to address that need where, you know, last year in the Florida game, Hunter goes down, and they're kind of hobbling on the leg. They've got Rodgers, and they've got a few other guys here and there. The running game never really got there, so they struggled.
Yeah.
And now they've addressed some needs where, hey, if we lose a receiver, it's not over. We got other guys, more than one other guy.
And I don't know if you saw the conversation me and your cousin had on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
The day before. And, I know y'all were decimated by injuries last year.
Yes.
But Tennessee is a type of program, in my mind, traditionally, that at its heyday, you know, your twos should always be better than Kentucky's ones.
I agree.
You know.
Completely agree.
Because they have the highest recruiting budget. Their facilities are incredible. You know, Tennessee's loaded with players,
mm-hmm.
especially in West Tennessee. There's no reason in East Tennessee. Right next door to University of Knoxville is Alcoa and Maryville, who I think between them have won like 15 state championships
right.
in the past 10 years, or maybe more than that, and they dominate each other. I know for 5 or 6 years straight, and they're about 45 minutes. Their neighbor town is about 30 minutes outside Knoxville. The only loss that either team had was to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a couple of kids, you know, the ones that can play do. Aaron Douglas was a Maryville kid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of Alcoa kids. Randall Cobb played at Kentucky. He's an Alcoa kid.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, it's so eerily similar to what Alabama was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sad to me because – I think there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to have a top program
there. I agree. And I'm ready for us to start winning again, you know. Bama fans went through that. To that point, you're like, are we going to be good again?
Yeah. And, I put on Twitter, I said, Tennessee fans, true Tennessee fans, what's the best, the last win that y'all have had that you walked out of the stadium and you felt good?
Yeah.
You know, felt good about the win. And I had a mixed bag. I had some people said, 07 Tennessee, maybe Marshawn Lynch,
mm-hmm.
Hearing that. And then, Michael, your cousin, says Cincinnati this year. Is the program that bad
right.
to where you have to feel good? And I know Cincinnati's in a Big East, but those are teams that,
Well, I think Cincinnati this year was a big win simply because
– when it happened?
It was early.
Yeah.
And we were playing well, and we thought, man, we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
We're going to contend in the East.
But what did you beat them? You beat them, what, 40 to
–
It was a lot to a little.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, if you didn't beat Cincinnati a lot to a little, you wouldn't have felt good about it.
Right. I agree.
And that's the same thing – I've watched Alabama squeak by, get beat by Southern Miss, squeak by Southern Miss, get beat by Monroe, get beat by Northern Illinois, squeak by a bad Brent Shafer-led Ole Miss team.
Mm-hmm.
Where to now, if you did that, where we walked out of the stadium, we won, that's great. And you walk out of the stadium now, and that
off.
Happens, and you're pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no reason why the Alabamas, the Floridas, the Tennessees, the Georgias, shouldn't feel like that for every,
I agree with you.
And I'm an Alabama fan through and through, but I would love to see Tennessee back to where they should be.
Yeah. It makes SEC fun to watch. I mean, you look at the whole East this year. Georgia's not very good. Florida's not very good. Tennessee's not very good. It waters down. I mean, the SEC, it's the strongest conference, but this year outside of LSU and Alabama, it really wasn't. And I'll say that all day. It really wasn't. Those two teams were great. Outside of that, not very good. Very average teams. So, yeah, I think all SEC and just college football fans in general who love good football, and that's what the SEC produces, is good football. Looks forward to the time when teams are good again.
Yeah.
But who knows? We'll see. Hopefully it'll pan out for us.
Yeah, y'all have anybody that can cover DGB?
I hope so.
The Missouri... The next Andre Johnson coming into the SEC next year.
I hope so. I'm curious to see how that pans out too. The Missouri Texas A&M thing. Missouri comes to Neyland next year. I'd like to go to that.
Who also comes to Neyland? Terry Bowden.
Yeah, no kidding. Sure does, baby. Sure does. It won't faze him. I mean, he's played in Raleigh. About the same size.
I love those articles about they did with Janoris Jenkins about the Senior Bowl. I went from playing 95,000 to 3,500. And I think, come on, bro. Cuss a little slack.
Yeah.
Like, if you played at home, you played at least in front of 10,000.
Yeah, get us a break.
I mean, I know, like, Arkansas Tech or Wichita or places like that, you might play in front of, 200. But, I mean, give us a, come on now. You don't have to talk like with that podunk.
Yeah, come on. Show some love.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. that's just good for him, I guess.
Yeah. All right, we got baseball starting up soon.
Yeah.
This is the catcher report. And how many weeks
like,
now?
We're like, it's like 8 days.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
We started Shull Sports Talk during the postseason last year.
We did.
Wow. We did. We started Shull Sports Talk during the postseason in October. And now we're finally back full circle to the wonderful game of baseball being on television again. Did you see the Braves got new uniforms?
Yeah, I saw those. They're sweet.
Sweet.
The old school are bad.
Even though I'll say this, I wish we still wore red on Sunday.
Are they not going to wear red on Sunday?
No, they're wearing red on Friday now. They're going to wear those new ones on Saturday, Sunday. See, I feel like Sunday's a day where it's just like it's Sunday, it's kicking off the week.
Let's wear something different.
And you just wear one, that's the day that you wear one.
At first, I didn't like it. The new red
ones?
On Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what is this, you know? And then I was like, ah, those are sweet.
Yeah.
Like, I really like those. But, man, they just did not make any moves.
I know.
And then everybody in the division.
I know.
I got a tweet. I got a tweet right that's like, oh, the day before, the day Fielder signed with the Tigers, it was like, Tigers, Prince Fielder signs with the Nationals. And I'm thinking, if this is true.
Game over.
Yeah.
See you later.
They didn't do nothing. They traded Derek Lowe.
We're picked fourth right now in the division. Between the Phillies, I think the Nationals are two and the Marlins are three. Mets are still behind us. The Marlins made a bunch of big moves. The Nationals are continuing to be good, and the pesky Nationals who we can't beat every series anymore. Ridiculous. We'll go out and beat the Phillies 2 out of 3 and then get
swept by the Nats. It's just so... It's so frustrating.
Who's going to play short?
That Lustenicki guy. Justin Lustenicki.
Is it Lustenicki or is it like Pastrnicki?
Pastrnicki.
Tyler Pastrnicki.
He was their...
They're putting all their eggs in that basket.
He was their first round pick 2 years ago. He actually was a University of Alabama signee.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And Pastrnicki, and then he went to play football, and then he went, you know, obviously took the money and ran. You know, supposedly he's the guy that they signed. I think they signed Jack Wilson back.
Mm-hmm, I think so. Which would be nice to have him as kind of a,
you know,
guy in the infield.
I just, they, you know, usually coming in this time last year, I felt great. I was like, it's Braves season. We're great. You know, we're going to make a push for the pennant. And I just don't know.
I don't either, man.
How I feel about this year.
I mean,
year.
Then again, you look at it, we've got a lot of the same team, and we played well last year. But I felt like we needed to fill in some gaps.
I said Hudson's feeling better.
We need to fill in some outfield gaps. We need a power hitting outfield, and we don't have one.
No, I'll just go ahead and read off the roster what we got right now. Coming into camp, the active roster. You know, mm-hmm. This is, you know, a lot of people get invites. Brian McCann, David Ross behind the dish. Freeman, Brandon Hicks, mm-hmm. Who's kind of been, you know, close, you know, a couple of years. Chipper Jones, which...
Who knows?
He's 40 this year.
Yeah.
On opening day, April 24th, he'll be 40. Tyler Pastrnicki, who's younger than both of us.
That's exciting to see, isn't it? As we do a talk show in the spare bedroom of your house.
The red room.
He's making millions.
Yeah. In December 13th, 1989. Mm. And then Dan Ugla, who, if he hits like he did, you know, June, July last year, all year this year,
will be
great. And then Jack Wilson. Outfield, Michael Bourne. They re-signed him for 1 year.
I'm excited for him to come back.
Yeah, I'm interested in play a whole year. I really like Bourne. I think he changed the way they played the offensive game. Constanza is back.
Which will be good.
Diaz, which I love Matt Diaz. Jason Hayward, we'll see.
He's going to have to have it. If he don't have a good year this year, he's going in the same book as Frank Hoare.
Which I hate to see that.
I'd hate to see it too.
Hinsky and Prado.
Glad to see them finally resign.
If there's anything, you know, they want to trade Jurgens and Prado. There's a lot of talk, Seth Smith, the Rockies. A lot of talk of doing those things. If there's anything to feel good about, it's their young pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Going to camp, and some of these guys, Jairo Asensio, I've never heard of him. Louis Avalon, Brandon Beachy, of course, you know,
Will Miner take low spot, you think, in rotation?
I mean, Randall Delgado.
Okay, could do it. He could. You're right.
You know, Corey Guerin was back. Tommy Hansen. J.J. Hoover, I've heard great things about him.
Yeah, and he's I want to say he went to Calhoun.
Did he?
I believe he did. Click on it and see if he did. I want to say he's from, like, the Pensacola.
Calhoun Community College.
Yeah, he went to Calhoun. He was there when my brother played, worked for the team there. My brother was a walk-on there for a little bit. And he was there, and they really liked him. I think he's from Pensacola originally, I believe. Maybe he's from up north. Does it say?
He's born in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, that's where it was. Pennsylvania, Pensacola.
And then you have, of course, you know, Christian Martinez. He could be a starter. Chris Medlin could always start. Tayron,
mm-hmm.
who they think could be a starter.
Yeah.
Arodis Vizcaino, and Varvero. A lot of guys with live arms that could come in. And you don't know much about some of these guys. Todd Redmond, never heard of him.
Right.
Anthony Varvero, you know, he made some appearances last year. Corey Gear made some appearances. I'm not a fan of Freddie.
Gonzalez, yeah, you're not. See, I am. I like Freddie Gonzalez.
I mean, there's a guy sitting in the booth this year that, I would hate for us to do what we did last year and then not make a push after Francona.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
But, and I know, I mean, I like Freddie, all right. I think I know everything about him because of Behind the Beyond the Lights.
If I have to watch Behind the Story or whatever.
Beyond the Lights or
whatever
like
it is. Like one more, and that's the thing, you watch a game on Sports South, it's not like you already get that in every rain delay, but every commercial. Beyond the Lights, Behind the Lights, Freddie Gonzalez Story. We know your parents came from Cuba and they persevered, man. We know. And we're happy for them. I don't need to know 1,500 times.
Question about the uniforms. Are they wearing the M on the hat? Or the,
no, they're wearing the
regular A.
The regular hat that's blue with the red bill. Even though, I wish we would have kept the same patch. I love the Screaming Indian patch. Love it. That thing is awesome. But, anyway, speaking of baseball...
UNA?
UNA baseball kicked off this past weekend. We had a rain out on Saturday, so just went doubleheader on Sunday and lost a game there, which hurts. You know, they saw a little bit of that last year. Could have had a 40-win season if we didn't lose some games late.
For our listeners out there, 40 wins, you win 40 wins in college baseball, you've had a pretty
You get to 40 wins, normally you're going to get a regional
bid. A pretty good
that's,
dang
that's
year.
That's kind of the story behind it. And that's not just like 40 wins regional.
Is 40 wins comparable to 20 wins in college basketball?
How many games they play in college basketball?
35.
See, oddly enough, 40 wins in college in D2 college baseball, they play 50 games.
So you're 40-10.
Yeah.
You've had a pretty good day.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. But that's always been kind of the number for regional bids is 40. Won both on Sunday. Had a rocky start off against Kentucky State, who we played last year. They were much improved.
Yeah.
Last year, I think we beat them 31-3 in game one.
Was it even that?
Yeah, I think so. I think they got three.
I figured we were in a little bit of a game when I showed up this year, and their coaches had their own helmets.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Had their own helmets. The players had helmets, and it was exciting. They had Cat Williams over there as the dugout coach. Look just like him, man.
They flicked y'all off. Just tell that story.
All right, we're out there on the decks. And I was there for part of it, and I had to leave and go do something. But we're out there on the decks in right field. UNA students, if you like baseball at all, and even if you don't really like baseball, and you want to come out to a UNA game, come sit on the decks, man. That's why they were built. They were built for the fans. And for y'all to go out there and not just sit and watch the game, but heckle the other team. That's why they're there. Let's call it like it is. So we were out there on the decks, and we did that. We heckled the other team. And let's just say their coach was a little upset with how things were being said, apparently, and gave us a nice solid bird finger to the decks. Which, I mean, I feel like you're doing your job. As a fan, if someone's responding to you on the other team, golf clap. You've done your job.
While we're talking about fans and opposing teams, Delmar calls two balks today.
Did he?
Not one, but two.
For them, I hope?
Yes.
Did he crow call?
It was he was crow calling.
That's fantastic. That's
he was fantastic. Crow calling, and the guy stepped off twice.
Oh, that's great.
Two balks. One of them let a run in. So Delmar, the 12th man,
home field advantage, baby.
The 10th man.
Did he sing the national anthem today?
He actually asked me and Jeff Hodges he needed a mic.
He's going big time now.
he said, well, when y'all play the national anthem, I need a mic so I can sing so people can hear me.
You don't need a mic for people
So we told him that, and for those who aren't from Florence, Delmar is a gentleman who roams the streets of downtown Florence.
And is at every UNA
Sporting event. He's one of our diehard fans, a very animated character. He wanted a mic so people could hear him.
That's fantastic.
And, of course, you know, being the intern, I get put on Delmar duty and have to tell him, no, we can't do that.
Of course.
I guess back to baseball.
They won today.
I've been impressed with them.
They've done some things well. Like I said, they started out a little slow. They picked it up. You hate to see a team wait five innings in a seven-inning ball game to really get it going.
Well, you know, me and you talked about that earlier today, and I brought it up. They get no hit.
Yeah.
Through four innings, and then they score 15 runs in two.
Yeah.
Today they have three hits and score 10 runs in the seventh inning.
And there's no doubt I think they have a little bit of offensive power as well.
I think, and I don't know how, you know, and I've been around baseball my whole life. I don't really know a whole lot, you know. But I've been impressed with the pitching, you know, for the most part. Johnny was kind of rough on Sunday. But this team has a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous combination of speed.
Yes.
And
which is UNA's game.
Two or three guys who can rake.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get JP and Schmidt on, you know, and then you've got, you know, you got Sear and Sloan who can bop a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and JP Lemonyan and Schmidt can, you know, have got some pop in their bats too, and I think Schmidty.
Yeah, we've got a little guest on the show tonight, Michael Schmidt, who is senior second baseman for the UNA Baseball Alliance. Schmidty, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem, buddy. All right, we're talking about the past three games. 3-0 now after two wins, Kentucky State on Sunday, a win today against Martin Methodist. How do you feel that the season has kind of started off?
Well, you know, we got our first real test today against Martin Methodist, and I feel like some of the younger guys responded pretty well to their first, you know, true college baseball test. And the freshmen that got the pitch, even against Kentucky State, you know, that's one surprise that I saw. They looked pretty confident on the mound, and that's a pretty good sign this early in the year.
Yeah, no doubt. And you've had some of those, a lot of your middle relief pitchers have been freshmen coming in. You've had Brantley Clark from here in Florence, went to Florence High School, and Jacob Westerhouse from the Harvest area, same as Josh Carpenter from Spartan, and then Ben Seabrook also from Huntsville, all true freshman pitchers that have come in the relief and done pretty well.
Yes, I mean, that was a big question mark, you know, early in the year was, are these freshman pitchers going to step up? And you know, as of right now, they've responded very well, and I feel like, you know, they had a potential to help us out a lot this year.
Now, let me talk about for a second a teammate of yours who has started off the year pretty hot, Andrew Allman, junior, redshirt junior. He came in. He didn't start game one, you know. Coach Keene was kind of – didn't know. He liked both Jordan Gurley and Andrew Allman at third. Was going to kind of toy with them and see who was going to play there. Gurley started in game one on Sunday, and then Allman came in, pinch hit, did well, played the second game, and then goes off and hits, a two-run home run today. And he's been red hot since the season started.
Oh yeah, I mean he's been one of the major contributors so far in these first three games. I mean he didn't get the opening day start, but I mean he could have, you know, sat down and held his head down, but I mean he, you know, stayed ready and he got his chance that second game against Kentucky State and really took advantage of it. And like you said, you know, had a big day today against Martin Memphis, hitting the home run, and you know he's really rising to the occasion.
All right, now let me ask you this. We had Hancock on the show, Coach Hancock, last time that we had a show, and we talked about kind of the preseason rankings, and he told us kind of what y'all are doing as far as owning that number 9 ranking from College Baseball Lineup, and also understanding through the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association poll that had y'all at 38. As a player, how do you feel about the preseason rankings and what that does to a team at the beginning of the season?
Well, as a player, I mean, it's always good to, you know, have that number next to your name, but it also comes along with the target that you have on your back, and that target's going to stay there. Everybody's going to want to beat you. You're going to see everybody's best arms week in, week out, and, you know, we can't just have that number next to our name and go out there and expect anything just to be given to us. You know, we got to go out there and earn it and play our game, and, you know, that's the main challenge for us. We can't just, you know, expect things to be given to us. We got to go out there and take it.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And we talked with Hancock about, you know, the schedule this year and how, yes, it is favorable to be at home for as much as we are, but still definitely a tough schedule. A lot of games, as usual. And headed into this weekend, we got Wichita Baptist. What are your thoughts headed into the weekend?
Well, we got a few days to prepare for Wichita Baptist. You know, we still have a lot of areas we need to improve on. One in particular is that we have talked about as a team is situational hitting. You know, we've not really done as good as we can in that aspect of the game. Also, you know, we've been walking a few guys, so we plan to polish up on those two areas before we get into this weekend with Wichita Baptist because, you know, they're one of the teams that can expose, you know, one of those weaknesses in the team. And, you know, again, this will be another test for us this weekend in Wichita Baptist.
No doubt. No doubt. Looking at your roster this year, much of it's very similar to last year as far as the infield goes. Now, the outfield's been shaken up a little bit. J.P. Lemonian has moved to center field, and from what I saw this past weekend, transitioned there fairly well. As far as everybody else and some of the new guys that have plugged in, I know a lot last year had to do with the team chemistry that was with that team and the things that they did, and they did everything together, and they were one big unit. Do you feel that y'all have that once again this year as a unit, as a group?
I do. I mean, last year was great, and all. I mean, we had great chemistry last year, and that I feel like that was a main, you know, contributor of how we did so good last year. You know, I feel like this year, you know, we're just as good chemistry wise. I mean, everybody in the locker room gets along. I mean, we play for each other, and you know that's gonna be big in the long run during the season down the stretch when we get into postseason because, you know, you can't have selfish players on the field. You gotta be able to play for one another, and you know that's something that we plan to build on throughout the year. It's always a building process. You can't just, you know, start from day one and everybody be getting along perfect. It's a building process. You gotta, you know, get along all year long. It can't just be, you know, this day you get along and the next day you don't. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And I definitely think that was a big factor that helped to that team's success. I mean, there's been plenty of talented teams that didn't have that and didn't make it near as far as last year's team did, and they were talented and had that to go with it, and I think that helped propel them. We've seen all three starting pitchers throw now. Johnny Hornbuckle and Michael Watkins do on Sunday, and Chad Bonner got to throw today since the weekend series kind of got messed up with the Saturday rainout. How do you feel now that you've seen all three starters pitch? How do you feel about that, you know, how they did for the most part, and them as we head into a weekend series this weekend and more in the future?
Well, I feel like our three starters and, you know, Hornbuckle, Watkins, and Bonner had, you know, positive and, you know, some things they feel like they need to work on. And I just think that just comes with being this early in the season. You know, Watkins is new to this role. Johnny Hornbuckle last year threw the 7-inning game, and he is now, you know, throwing that 9-inning game. that's going to be a transition that he's going to have to adjust to. And with Bonner throwing Sunday, you know, he's always done that. He's done that the past couple of years here at UNA. So I feel like we have experience along with, you know, new guys that some of the guys that have been there before can help, like the guy like Michael Watkins out, like Johnny pitched a 7-inning game last year. With Watkins throwing the 7-inning game this year, Johnny can kind of, you know, help him out with the transition from, you know, junior college pitching into Division II 7-inning game.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let me ask you this. We were just talking about, before you called in, talking about kind of the lineup and how it's set up. You've got you at the leadoff spot, and Josh Doyle, who's a junior college transfer, is hitting the two spot, and he's shown a lot of great speed in the first couple of games. He had, what, three bunt for hits in the first game, I think, against Kentucky State? And
he had three drag bunts, yeah.
And then you've got Sear and Sloan, Lemunyan, and Allman now, as you know, he's definitely put the work in the offseason, just like everyone has, of course. And you've got some power there. But then again, some of those guys, I mean, Lemunyan's a quick guy. Sloan is sneaky fast, so to speak. He doesn't look near the speed that he has. And then you've got some guys down there at the end anchoring it with Carpenter and Parker and Corpy. How do you feel that kind of the lineup plays out, and how do y'all play to your advantage with the UNA style?
Well, our style at UNA is definitely, you know, put the ball on the ground and run. We got a lot of speed this year, and, you know, Doyle and me and JP and, you know, even guys on – we got guys on the bench that can, you know, come in and steal a base at any given time, and that's always a positive that you need on a baseball team. And with our style of play at UNA, it really fits well because we have table setters at the top of the lineup that really, really do a good job of getting on base, but there's power guys in the middle to drive them in. And like you said, Sloan is by no means a slow guy for as big as he is. And, you know, that's just a plus when you have a guy that can run a little bit in the middle of your lineup.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. If that ball doesn't go out of the yard, he still can do something on the base pass, and that's definitely a plus to have. You'll have a lot of teams that have that big guy, and that's about all they've got. Schmitty, before we let you go, I got to ask you to do this. I got to have a nice big moose call from you, man, before I let you go.
All right, no problem, man. We had a couple today, I believe. We're starting to get the new guys into it, but it's catching on. But,
there you go.
Hopefully we get a lot more this weekend.
There it is. All right, Schmitty, well, we appreciate you calling
in,
man. We look forward to this weekend and seeing y'all play out, and we definitely hope to have you back on the show to talk about possibly some higher rankings and how y'all progressed throughout the season, buddy.
All right, Ben. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. We'll
see
you.
See ya.
All right. Obviously good to hear from one of the senior leaders on that team.
Yeah.
As they progressed, and he was on the team last year that had that success. So, and I think that goes a long way, too, is we had so many returners that came back this year. And they tasted that little bit of success last year, making it all the way to the regional and the semifinal of the regional. And they tasted the success, but they also know how it feels to come up short, you know, of that World Series.
And I think, you know, especially in baseball, where JUCO ball is really prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of kids choose JUCO over a smaller four-year route coming out of high school.
So they can go pro.
You know, they can go pro, or they can go, you know, hopefully try to get a D1 offer or whatever. That and Schmidt was a JUCO guy, correct?
Kevin, yeah, he was from Calhoun.
I think it's very important, and he understands that because he was a JUCO guy.
Right.
That, hey, you're a junior, hey, you're a senior. You've got to provide leadership for these guys, even though you haven't been here your
right,
whole time. And
right.
I think, you know, and he definitely sounds like a guy who's 100% in, you know,
bought
in. And I think having a guy like that who is your leader but is a JUCO transfer can help those guys.
Yeah.
You know, because you, I mean, Doyle, you know, he's a transfer guy.
Exactly.
Watkins is a transfer guy. And I think, and I like the JUCO things because you have guys who, yes, are new to us. You know, they're new to UNA, but Watkins is pitching some big games at Motlow. You know, they're a top Tennessee junior college.
Right.
And, you know, Calhoun's and I think Doyle's a Shelton kid.
I believe so.
Yeah,
believe so.
You know, Shelton's one of the top JUCOs in the nation. So anytime you get those guys come in, it's very important for your leaders to buy into what you're trying to do. And Schmidt's a perfect example of that.
Oh, yeah.
As no a doubt. Guy who's, you know, definitely a team-first guy. You can understand that just, you know, hearing him talk. And
right, and if you look at the players last year, of the seniors that we had on the team, the only four-year senior we had was Trey Mitchell.
Yeah.
Everybody else was a JUCO transfer, McGregor, Stroth.
And that's credit to the coaching staff.
Yeah.
They got some kids there that I'm just like, how are these guys, you know, here?
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I agree. Great job recruiting and Drake. I think
the year they signed Mothershed, he had like, 20 home runs?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, and he probably had some opportunities to go elsewhere.
Right.
You know, and it's a testament of those guys to get him to stay home and and he was a great 2-year player for us and just like Michael has been and will continue to be. And hopefully Doyle and Watkins, you know, can continue, and Sloan's a JUCO guy.
Yeah.
So JP, you know, he's a 2-year guy, so you know, things like that are important.
Yeah.
Especially in baseball.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. And baseball is one of those things we've talked about before where And again, I may be biased because I'm a baseball guy, but I feel like chemistry plays a bigger role. There's a lot of games, and it's more of the you can't have with one solid if you got a solid 4-hole hitter, and 1 through 3 and 5 through 9 are just okay, you're gonna struggle. If you've got one solid or two solid defensive players, it's more of the. And I'm not saying that football, basketball, those are team sports. There's no doubt.
Baseball's tricky because it's a team sport that is very individual.
Yeah, it is.
It's a team sport rather than an individual game, and that's what makes it beautiful, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's team chemistry goes a long way, but it's still just you in that box.
Yeah.
You
know? Exactly.
And you have to have those guys that pick guys up when they're having a bad day. You know, because, you know, Almond, you know, as hot as he is right now, isn't going to be hot forever.
Right.
You know, and the guys who are starting off cold, they're not going to be cold the whole year.
Right.
You know, it's important for you to have chemistry and to have those leaders that, you know, can pick those guys up when you're cold.
Yeah.
You know, when the dinks aren't falling. You know, today Almond kind of barely waved at one. 2-3 inches off the plate, you know, and didn't hit it very hard, but typical I'm hot fashion, you know, snakes through the hole
right.
for a single.
Find something.
You know, and then sometimes when you're just as cold as you can be, you'll hit, you know, a rocket laser and the shortstop's going to make a diving, a diving stop in the hole and throw you out.
Or you'll smoke one right at the left field.
Exactly. Baseball's a tricky game. It's a funny game. And it's, you know, it's beautiful. And it really is. And that's why it's fun to watch. And you know, I fully expect as a fan, you know, when it comes around to the regional tournament, why can't it be in Florence, Alabama?
Yeah.
You know?
I completely
agree.
That would be
fun. It'd be
fantastic.
Huge. And I think definitely this team could do it.
I think so, too.
Focused. And they have set up, and Hancock and Keenan do a great job, and they've set it up to be great for, you know, the way it was in the mid-90s, you know,
right.
I think we can be there. And this team doesn't have a Joshua Wenham, maybe a Douglas Hargett type of guy, but they've got some guys who can play, and they definitely bought into UNA baseball.
Right.
You know, and they've got some guys who can play UNA baseball.
And that's the other thing, too, especially in the college game, not so much in the pro, but in the college game, you got to buy into the system that's being coached. And you don't necessarily always agree with it. You don't maybe like the way it is, but you buy into it. And if everyone, all 9 on the field, are buying into that system, it's going to work. You know, the coaches aren't in the position they are by happenstance.
Yeah.
Right? They've proven that they've got an idea of what's going on. They've got a system that works if everyone will buy into it and do it.
Yeah. And those are, you know, talking about people who, testaments to people who do things. You know, you look at Coach Keene, the guy who probably had opportunities to go other places and move closer back to Nebraska, you know, Kansas, you know, where he's from and stuff, because he was an assistant for Lane forever.
Yeah.
The guy who bided his time and waited his time and finally got his, you know. And you got Hancock, a guy who played here, GA'd here. You know, all he knows is UNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys want to be here and they love UNA. You know, and some, you know, some jobs was like, you know, some programs that they take a UNA job, but these guys have, you know, have invested in UNA.
Right.
And I think that's what, you know, but I love our baseball program. It's fun to watch and fun to be a part of. And,
yeah, no doubt.
It's just a beautiful place to watch a baseball game.
It is.
It's great, you know, to be as cold as it has been. And good crowds. I mean, I think I think people are glad. Something new's here, you know, and I think people know the expectations of the baseball team, and I think they realize that this team could be something special, and I think they will continue to be something special. I fully expect us to be, next time in you talk us, to be, you know, 5-1-6-0.
Yeah, so I feel that way too.
To win,
reason why they shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think you should. I think they feel like, and I know with like baseball. With the Braves and stuff, you want to win their series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sweeps are great.
Yeah.
You know, but if you take 2-1, 2-3 every time you step on the field, every time you go Saturday, you know, you're gonna feel pretty good about yourself.
Yeah.
Because two out of three is add up.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. There ain't no question about that at all. UNA students, fans, you can follow UNA baseball on Twitter at UNA baseball, very simple. They'll give you some game updates, inning by inning updates.
They do a good job.
Picture updates. They do a great job of that. All that type stuff. So if you ever can't make it to a game, you can definitely follow the game all the way through, for the most part, through updates. And they won't just say, "Hey, after one, it's 3-0." They'll say, "After one, 3-0," and tell you how we got on three.
Just how we got there.
So
why we didn't score, and like that. They do a great job. As far as the social media aspect is from, and I enjoy, you know, I'm at most of the games. I got to take over baseball operations pretty much this year, and can deal with that and split time with our staff and doing baseball. And I'm there most of the time, but I still like to see the, you know, the updates on Twitter when I'm in the office or whatever.
Oh yeah,
I think it's good. I'm looking forward to Saturday afternoon.
Oh no,
it's gonna be cold.
Yep.
You know winter's here because it's baseball season.
Of course.
71 last week, and I walk into the Lane field the other day, and it's 40.
Of course it is.
And it's going to be 40 on Saturday.
Yep.
But that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And it's definitely great if you're a fan of baseball, and again, even if you're not, it's fun. Get a group out. Come out to the decks. Watch a game. I mean, you can grill out there. You know,
have your beverages.
Have your beverages.
We don't.
We're not
condoning that.
We won't tell you anything. We're
not talking what kind of beverage. Diet Coke, Pepsi.
Yeah.
But you know, they have. People have a good time out there.
It's a good time out there. You have fun. You get to enjoy a good game, and you get to poke fun at the other team. Who doesn't have fun doing that?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want to do
that?
Why
wouldn't you? Maybe you can get flicked off by a head coach or by a coach. You know. Well, we appreciate you listening tonight. We're glad to have Schmitty on to talk some UNA baseball. Hopefully it won't be as long till we talk to you again. And we look forward to it. Until next time, guys. Word to your mother.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. Collaborate and listen. I sit back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Dance. Crush a speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom. Deadly. When I play a dope melody, anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it. You better gain weight. You better hit bullseye. The kid don't play. If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook.